If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again today. As usual, Quentin D'Souza is here with me. How are you, Quentin?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Rob?
I'm feeling good, man. I had a little bit of a cold the last few days, but just coming out of it, like, changed my world perspective again. I was like all down and grumpy from being sick.
Oh, yeah.
So now I'm feeling good again.
You're lifting 95-pound dumbbells. Like, what the... He's sending me videos of like 95, like pumping 95 dumbbells. I'm looking at my dumbbells. I got like 50s. I'm like, oh man, this is pathetic.
Well, I just share, like, see, I don't even put stuff. I don't like post any of my gym stuff on Instagram or any of that stuff. Like, I just don't do it. Like, I don't care if other people do it and that's their thing. That's fine. But I just sent that to you, by the way, just for you. And then he goes and puts it on Instagram, on his Instagram.
Of course. What do you think, man? Yeah, well, you know, Jen's got to be proud of what her husband looks like there, right? Come on.
Everyone listening, please go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca. You can hook up with all of the people that we have. Well, not hook up with them. You can get in touch with them. Get in touch with all the people that we have had on the show in the past. And they've got all of their links in the show notes and all that kind of stuff. So go over there and get in touch with us and then go over to iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what kind of content you want to hear in the future, what you like, what you don't like, all that kind of stuff. So go over to iTunes and leave us a review. I know, man, I say it so much, say it at the beginning of every show, but not all of you are doing it. So take this as a little bit of a call to action and go over and rate and review the show, please. I know you're going to want to give us 5 stars. Quentin's been doing an amazing job here. You know, it's crazy. We're almost pushing like a year with you on the show.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's been fun. And I really enjoy talking to the different guests and, you know, making different types of connections with people. It's been really cool. So I'm excited about continuing to do that in the new year. And, you know, thanks for having
me.
Kicking
it up a notch. Let's
absolutely, you know, take, you know, when you have different hosts too, I'm sure it takes it in different directions as well. So, yeah. And, you know, I've got my bobblehead Rob to remind me of doing the podcast. So it's always, always handy. So I appreciate that. And I don't know, like, I like talking real estate and investing in wealth. And, you know, this is right up my alley. So I'm hoping that it helps other people and inspires them to continue to do what they do, right? Every week I'm working on projects. And, you know, right now I've got, I'm working on converting. I've got a property in Bowmanville that is a detached house and it has 2 units in it. And I had to do a variance in order to get the lot split. So I've been able to split the lot in two and I can take the detached house, have a demising wall down the middle, and I've turned it into a semi-detached house. Now,
no way, really?
Yeah. And so what I'm able to do with that is I can put 3 units on one side and 3 units on the other side. So I'm taking that single family home now and converting it into a sixplex. So I'm going to get I've got all the plans done, but I'm thinking about actually just selling the lot and the plans and to somebody who's interested in doing that type of project. Because I bought that property quite a while ago. I've made lots of money. Someone can make a couple hundred thousand once they've done the conversion. I can go and take the money and put it into other projects. And actually, for me, it's more about I probably just enjoy it a little bit. Maybe travel to Costa Rica, meet up with my buddy in Costa Rica there. What's his name again? Rob Brake. Have some fun there. So I'm doing that sort of stuff. How about you? What are you working on in Costa Rica other than your big muscles?
Well, I mean, I'm always working as a realtor here, so that's a lot of fun too. But it is so much different because, like, a lot of times when people visit here, it's like a blink of an eye sort of thing, right? And especially when if I'm busy and like I know people that are coming down, it's almost hard for me to get together and even have a drink because it seems like it's like 4 days have gone by and they're gonna leave in like 2 days later, and you're like, whoa, that went by so quick, right? But just the and it's the same when clients come down and you're trying to show them everything you can show them and give them like a good overview of the way that things work and all that kind of stuff, and they're gone, right? And so a lot of times, people cool off when they leave. So it's really only those that, have the real passion for the country that do end up pulling the trigger. So that is where I find it's a little bit different from, just showing some numbers of something in Ontario and they're ready to go based on the investment, just looking at it as an investment. Where I think when it comes to Costa Rica, as much as, that's important to most people buying, they are looking for something as well where they can enjoy it for a certain amount of time through the year. So it makes it a lot different,
Yeah,
but it's
that's
still
cool.
fun,
That's neat. It sounds like you're keeping busy. And funny enough, our next guest, I was in the port. Well, before we jump there, did you want to jump?
I wanted to ask you one thing before we
Sure.
introduce Mike here. I wanted to ask you one thing. Because I was interested in what those plans looked like. Is that like a garden suite on each side,
No.
or you're going up with it? Is that what you're
Yeah.
doing? And
So
you
what
can
I've
use the
done.
basement as well?
I appreciate you because it is kind of awesome the way that I've got this done. So by putting the demising wall, what I've done is I created a top up. So basically, you're going to take the top floor off. You're going to put another floor on the top and an addition on the back to get the square footage, and that allows me to have probably about 900 square foot units, so two bedroom units across all six. So that's just within the footprint of the house and the addition on the back. So you're really just doing construction on the top and the addition on the back. And then in the future, you could always look at adding garden suites on both sides because you really just cut it off. Now, it depends on the municipality. Right now, I don't think you could get away with it in Bowmanville for the additional garden suites, but that doesn't mean in the future you won't be able to. And the six units, what's beautiful about it, because it is six units and the way that the footprint looks, you're most likely going to be able to get CMHC financing on it, and it's possible that you could get some of the building financing. Now, they're really looking for that building financing for like 50 or 60 units, but you never know, depending on your exit strategy, you could still just put it into a standard CMHC program and get all your money out of the project too. So it's really an interesting project that I think for the right person. I'm at a different stage right now. I'm more at my enjoy stage. I'll probably end up selling off some of my like my, all my smaller properties over the next 15, 20 years, one a year, and just to enjoy some of the benefits of the equity that we've gained over the last 20 years. So
Yeah, and then that's amazing because you've still got all your bigger, like you're into much bigger investment projects now, like apartment buildings, in the States and in Canada, right?
Yeah, 25. So we've got 25 apartment buildings in Ontario, and I don't have apartment buildings in Tampa. I have like single family homes and duplexes. So those are doing really well, the cash flow well. But yeah, for me, I'm probably I find that right now that there is it is interesting because of the densification rules that I've seen municipalities have. I think what I'm going to start to do is look at all my projects and do all the plans, get all the variances done, make it all ready, like kind of like paper ready, and then sell those projects over time. And then that
Oh, that
way,
sounds great.
yeah, so people can add the unit, add a garden suite, whatever it is. I'll get everything ready for them. All they have, and it becomes a value add to the actual, like, so it's not just your regular duplex, right? It's a duplex plus two or a duplex
Plus
plus
potential.
four in this case, right? So
And
that's
Quentin's going to be doing all the research for you guys. I know there's probably going to be some listeners interested in that, but you're doing all of the legwork, right? You're finding out highest and best use. And then they just walk in and get some amazing opportunity.
And they have to do the, well, they have to do the construction work and all of that. I'm not, the reason why I always find that with deals, it's important to create some equity so that they can, take it to the next step, right? Always leave some meat on the bone, right? That's what I feel makes sense for projects. That's what I'm going to be doing with these type of projects. So,
Oh, that sounds great.
gotta create the relationships with people. Sorry, I didn't want to go down that path, but
Well,
I
I
mean
was just
it's
too curious to not ask because you don't know whether it's just what you've got there, and then you throw the a small like one bedroom in the basement, and then you got garden suites or something like that,
Right.
where
No,
I
this is
find that actually a lot more appealing, you know.
yeah, you're purpose built, we're going to end up with 6 units, probably, let's say you're renting 1900 plus all utilities, because you can do that with when you're building it out like that. Like if you're using a cap rate with 1900, that value can that could be in the millions, right? So that if you're depending on how what your construction costs are, you can do quite well on it. So try to, like I said, leave meat on the bone for the next person.
Very good. Awesome. Okay. Thanks for sharing that.
No problem. So this next guest is I met him in Playa del Carmen. He was down there for, I don't know, a few months, and he was just enjoying himself. We were talking a little bit of real estate. We're talking about crypto. We're just, having an interesting conversations. And it's always good to connect with people. I met Mike a few years ago, and I wanted to get to know him a little bit. He did property management, and he was in the Niagara area and St. Catharines and down that area. And it was always interesting to chat with him because he was also interested in stocks, cryptocurrency. He's invested in some international projects. He's flipping merchandise, so he's got a lot of different.
Merchandise. We're gonna have to get into that. I
That's
like
gonna be pretty cool.
quite a
So
broad term.
yeah, so he's been doing some interesting things, and I always find that it's good to talk to. I enjoy talking to people who are doing unique and different things, and Mike Yolano is just one of those guys. So I think this will be an interesting conversation with Mike, and I'm sure that he's gonna give us any more details that he wants. But I thought we could start off with just a little bit of, where you got involved in real estate investing, Mike, and managing student rentals and that part of your life.
Welcome, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here, guys. So, my journey has been a bit of a long one, and I've changed paths a couple times, but that's kind of normal, I guess, depending on what field you get into. So, I actually went to school in Niagara. I got a degree in health sciences. Nothing to do with investing at all. And you know how it goes, right? You're young, you're 18, you're 19, you're picking a degree. And sometimes, by the time you're done, it's not actually what you want to do. And you might find out later that that's the case. So I didn't realize I don't like being stuck in a cubicle. I don't like doing office type work. And when I was 19, I worked at a Chinese restaurant. I didn't know where I wanted to be. I didn't have experience in an office or anything like that. And once I got into the office environment, my, my zest for the work went way down. And it was much, it wasn't very exciting for me. I didn't feel like I was accomplishing much. I didn't feel like I was being challenged much, and I didn't really like it. So, I started hearing from certain people around me, a couple of relatives that were really into real estate. And, when I started talking to them, it got me interested. And once I stepped my foot in the door with real estate, as the market kept going up. And so I began to like it more, the freedom of being an investor, eventually property manager for other people. And it kind of just snowballed into me becoming full-time real estate from about 2008 onwards. And I was in my 20s. I was pretty young at the time still. I think I got my first house at 24. And once I got my foot in the door and that snowball started rolling, my dedication became towards real estate and investment. And I was always statistical and value-based thinking. I was always really good at stats. And I was always really interested in my hockey cards and judging value and all that stuff. And when I got into real estate, it kind of reignited that flame. And I was able to help clients decide, hey, how do we get more rent? Where should I buy? Where do you think the real estate market's going? And I kind of got into that as a snowball effect or almost an accident.
Okay, and what year was this?
I got my first house in 2005. And I began property management by 2008.
And by 2008, how many, or at the peak, how many units do you think you're managing, or rooms?
It was a little under 100 properties, which could have been, many hundreds of tenants. Student homes had five or six people in each one. So I was a landlord to 500 or 1,000 people.
Oh man, that you must have some really interesting stories. What's the funniest thing that ever happened to you as a property manager?
So, I mean, there's some stories I just can't tell you, but
Well, those are the best ones.
I'll tell you one that's allowed to be told here. So, I was managing a property for a friend, and these guys were renting it, and there was no issues with renting the house to them or anything, and the rent was paid and all that good stuff. And I remember going to their house to collect rent one time, and I was like, wow, these guys got a lot of beer posters hanging off the wall, right? They probably borrowed them from a local bar or something like that. And they had these big, I won't even say the brand, but big beer posters. And when they moved out, I remember going in there to kind of just check the place out. And you start moving stuff, putting stuff in garbage bags. And I go to pull one of the beer posters off the wall. And behind the beer poster, when you flipped it up over their couch, they had the entire NCAA brackets filled in all the way to the finals and who won in permanent Sharpie on the wall. And so it's not a very good story. I mean, the owner had to repaint and go over that with Kell's primer probably
Don't you
five
think they could have turned the posters around and wrote it on the back of the poster?
times. They probably could have. But it would have
Wow.
made for less of a cool story for them, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But I knew who won the championship that year. I mean,
I'm sure. It's always, so it's always things like that. I guess,
that's not that bad.
no, I mean,
No.
I think a lot of times people misunderstand student rentals and what's going on there. You must have had to shatter some biases when it came to investors and it came to student rentals, right?
Oh, I would constantly be fully honest with people about how it goes, and not everyone does that. And I was very adamant about that because otherwise, later, if a problem comes up, they're going to blame me, not realizing it's a common thing that could happen, right? And at the end of the day, I tell people, if you're going to make 50 grand or a couple hundred grand or whatever off your property in the coming years, paint the wall. try to see if their guarantor will pay for it. If they won't, paint it. I mean, that's just the way, you're going to make more money than it costs to probably paint your walls, right? And you can write that cost off and try to, prevent it from happening as much as you can.
Mike, is
Right.
this your microphone right there on your, or is it
Right here,
clipped to
yeah.
your, yeah, you need to just move it because every time you move, it's dulling the audio.
Is it not, is it swinging?
No, that's perfect.
No, it's when you raise your hands
Yeah,
like
when you're
this.
moving your arms
Oh.
around,
It's
it
the
seems to.
Italian in you, right? Like he's got to use his hands
That
to talk.
should be
Hey.
okay now. I'll let you know
Okay.
if
I'll keep the
it
hands low.
fades back out.
Good
There was one
luck.
thing you said I couldn't hear just because it completely went out when you went like that.
Okay.
That's
Okay.
all right, we should be good.
That's funny.
So are you still managing? Are you still doing property management?
Pretty much not anymore. I started scaling
No.
that back years ago. It's quite a headache to manage properties.
That's
And
why I don't try to
yeah,
try not
it's
to
a
manage
hard
mine.
it's the hardest part of the it's the hardest part of the business is the management piece for sure. And it's the least glorious part, right? Like, it's like it's hard to it's a hard business, right? So did you end up selling it off or like
No, I just ended up scaling it back by choice, basically, and I just had my attention became shifted in other directions, and I had already started scaling it back in pieces because I just didn't want it to dominate my time, and I didn't want to sell it all either. So I kind of found a happy medium with it and transitioned into other, other methods of income.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of those other methods of income.
I
That's why we're
yeah.
here.
Oh yeah. Like the he used to I used to see all his wrestling stuff and he would be flipping it and I'm like,
What,
how
really?
can you make money on this stuff?
I
Like
heard people do that with shoes a lot. That's a big thing,
yeah,
flipping shoes, right?
Mike,
Okay.
tell us a little about that.
Yeah, so I mean that's like a little side venture. Like I said, I was always the kid obsessed with hockey cards. I was memorizing the value of the rookie cards and the next Beckett issue would come out, and I was very into that as a kid. So when I got into real estate, you can do a lot of that, right? Buy a corner property with extra land, and you start figuring out all these tricks for value, right? So I started looking at collectibles and started realizing that, people that had really old autographs or toys or boxing gloves or whatever, they would go up in value over time. Right. And so I kind of started by seeing someone post a bunch of vinyl records for sale, $5 each. I bought all of them, Guns N' Roses, the Beatles, all the best stuff. Right. And it kind of eventually got me into just generally going into collectibles. And I was really big Hulk Hogan fan, Macho Man, all those wrestlers back in the day. So I started literally judging value and I started saying, what's the rarest collectible style item you could get, right? You can get never open toys. Those are pretty rare. Never open video games. Those are pretty rare. And I started getting into buying some of the things that those wrestler guys would actually wear to the ring. And that's what I
Okay.
think Quentin was talking about. So
Yeah. So tell us like the best one that you did, the best kind of
you
flip
got a
that
Hogan do-rag or what?
I
No.
got, I've got the Hulk Hogan underwear. I got the yellow trunks he would wear to the ring, right? So I like he had an actual pair of the ones he wore to wrestle Andre the Giant or whoever he wrestled.
Oh, wow.
And I got a whole bunch of
Unwashed.
the Ultimate Warrior. I was a huge fan of the Ultimate Warrior, so I was getting knee pads and trunks and all these things for the Ultimate Warrior. Then he passed away, unfortunately, and that wasn't a good thing at all. And all of a sudden my collectibles go up in value 10x, And I just got deeper and deeper into it, and I have bought and sold some of the rarest collectibles out there.
How have you
That's
done on
cool.
them? Like, have you like 2x'd or 3x'd or 10x'd? How does that work?
Oh my goodness. I mean, like some of the $5 Beatles albums and stuff I bought must have gone up 10x. I have a sealed Nirvana album worth like $1,000. I think I paid $100 for it. I've got a lot of really rare stuff. I've got Mike Tyson autographed gloves. I've got posters. I've got all kinds of stuff. And I've even got some original old sealed video games like Street Fighter 2, Super Mario 3. Some of those are worth like 2, 3 thousand bucks. I maybe paid 100 or 200 for them. So,
Wow, and where do you keep them, just so I know? Are you, no.
I'll tell you after,
Oh,
yeah.
sure
So,
you will.
but so how do you decide what to keep, or is everything for sale?
Originally I was buying stuff and just flipping it for more money by buying it real cheap, and I knew the value and maybe the seller didn't. And I was actually selling really good stuff. And eventually I was like, okay, now everyone starts like there's a lot of people into collectibles, a lot of people into sneakers, there's a lot of people into all that stuff. And once I started to realize the future value, I actually would hold all my best stuff and really only put for sale my not so great stuff in recent years. So I have stuff that I'm going to hold for a while.
And just one more time, can you pull your mic out of your shirt? See if that is
Is it
try and
when I
keep it
move my
on,
hands or anytime?
try and keep it on the outside. Just anytime you just as I think it's just getting covered by your shirt or whatever when you move. So that's all. If it if you can just make sure it doesn't get covered when you move, then we should be all good.
Awesome.
That's what Quentin's doing this for.
Hands. I'll keep the
Figured,
hands. You know
anyone
what?
watching this video on
It's
YouTube is gonna think like, why is Quentin making like moose ears all the time?
the Italian. I can't. I. It's like trying to get an Italian man to
To
stop
not
moving his hand while
What
he
are you
talks.
talking about?
It's impossible. It's just like impossible. Okay. Sorry. So how many income at that time? I know that you were doing the property management, you're flipping products, and you were also doing like stock investing at the same time. So you had at least three sources of income that I know of. Were there any other income sources that you were generating at that time? Like, or those the main ones?
Those would be the main ones. I mean, I've been helping out to for the hiring process with firefighters for probably 20 years on the side. And but those were the three main money makers for me at that time.
And then working as, like, did you get paid for the hiring of the firefighters?
Yeah, that was a job. I mean, when I was at Brock University, my professor designed the program. They were paying us 10 bucks an hour as a student back then, and I know the person that ended up buying it, and I still help them to this day,
Oh,
actually.
that's cool. So you had like different ways that you were earning income as well as, your investments, right?
Well, I really like that you're following your passion and turning that into something that like makes money for you. You know, it's like you and your heart is 100% into it. So
Well,
that's the
I'll tell
coolest
you
thing
something
about
off.
it.
I don't have any Pokemon cards because I don't really care about them. I don't know anything about them.
Right.
And I was never a Star Wars fan, so I didn't know how to get the best Star Wars collectibles. It would have taken a lot of research I wouldn't have enjoyed, actually. So I dove into the subject matters that I knew best, and I tried to get some of the rarest and most sought after items I could.
I think that's a lesson for people, though, right? Like, okay, you can take it to the extreme level where if you dial back even to what Mike was saying about being in a cubicle all day, like just start from there. It's like there's no passion in that whatsoever. For most people, I don't know if they're really engaged in the in whatever they're doing, I guess you can pass 8 hours in a cubicle sometimes, but for me, like that resonates the most is like, I can't be in here. I can't be spending my day like told to sit in this one place all day long. I just can't do it, right? So I relate to that, a lot.
Yeah, and then Mike got involved with international. I have no idea how this international property investment. So I have a little background because I've met up with Mike before, and just chatting with him and the type of projects that he was involved in. Can you share a little bit about your like the international projects that you've got involved in?
Yeah, so I mean, it kind of ties into my overall investment plan, I guess. It's a bit of a complex answer. So, in 2022, as we know, markets changed. In Canada, interest rates changed in everywhere. And I started trying to figure out what I was going to do because I actually took a lot of profits on different investments. I sold some Canadian property, Bitcoin, a bunch of stuff, and I was kind of waiting for the market to go down. And I ended up having a friend that was already doing international real estate throughout the 2020, 2021 cycle. And they were investing in Portugal and places around the world, Spain, Mexico, USA, all over the place. And these are Canadian people. And basically, I was given an introduction into what they were doing. And I ended up dipping my toes into international investment. And I've got some stuff in Mexico now. I ended up being in Mexico when I saw Quentin in the winter. Part of it was because I was going towards the real estate there. And I just didn't really think Canada was the best place for my money at the time. And that turned out to be correct for the most part. And so I was just seeking places that seemed to be going up in value actually during the rate hikes, or that they were handling it better. And I was diversifying my investments.
How did they end up doing if like how did you get, so did you like, were you purchasing lots? Were you purchasing condos? Like, can you describe a little bit about that? And I think that'd be helpful.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of both. So there's some land where I've gone in with some partners and strategically combined them together, get some drawings together, right, to be able to build it or flip it to a builder.
Right.
And then there's some pre-construction stuff where this group I'm with already has established relationships with some pretty well-known builders, and we get to buy their first phase of construction, which is the cheapest phase of construction. And now the project is wrapping up and the prices are already higher.
Well, so what would you have for the pre-construction ones in Mexico? What would you have bought it at, and what do you think it's valued now?
So this was probably only a year ago or a little over a year ago that I got into a condo development, and they were probably worth maybe just 240, 250 US, is what we were buying them on that type of a projected payment. And right now we're seeing comps right around the same development, built by the same builder, same type of specs, and they're in the 400s. So seems like it's up probably 80% or something like that.
Wow, that's awesome. In just over a year.
Just over a year by getting in to the phase one, and you're letting your money sit there, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean the pre-construction market in Toronto in the last couple of years has been a bit of a nightmare, right? So it's interesting that you're using the same strategy, but you're doing it in Mexico, and this particular group is doing it in Portugal and and different places within Mexico, right? Not just so what were the places in Mexico? One was Cabo, right?
I mean, there's a bunch. Like, there's Puerto Vallarta, there's Cabo, there's Acumal, there's Playa del Carmen, Tulum. It's kind of spread out all over the place, but those are some of the main ones.
Wow, so you really got into and then is that how you ended up going to Mexico and like to look at the projects, or?
So it's funny. Like, I get invited to go to Mexico to check out this stuff, and I'd already researched it in advance and everything. And I don't know, I went there for a 2 week vacation and I ended up staying for months. And I like, initially it was like a week or two, like a week business, a week pleasure. And I don't know, the way of life there is so beautiful. The food there is amazing. The aura of the people, the aura of these cities is amazing. And I didn't want to go back to cold Canada where we were having interest rates go up and everything was going for crap. And
Sounds like Rob.
I just kind of stayed out. Like, I went to Costa Rica. I went to Costa Rica last summer. So I did a bachelor party trip to Nashville, which was awesome. And then right afterwards, I came to Costa Rica. And none of my friends wanted to come with me. They're not really like digital nomads. Like, they want to go to a resort or nothing. And I was like, no, nah, I'm going to go to actual Costa Rica. And I fell in love with the place. Like I had a great time there. The people were awesome. And I just learned so much. And they have a saying in Costa Rica, it's pura vida, and it just means pure life. Like, you got yourself a can of beer and a piece of chicken and you're watching the beach, life is good. And I just found such a big difference. Nothing against Canadians or anything, but we grow up in a world where we're always trying to get more money and more stuff. And the guy with a beer and a piece of chicken feels rich in Costa Rica.
Yeah, and that's one of my biggest things that I tell people too is don't go to an all-inclusive resort in Costa Rica. There are a few, and they're okay. I mean, like sometimes if I want to just a quick vacation, I'll jump to one. I'll go to like the Planet Hollywood is close to us, and there's a Ryu here that I'll go to every once in a while. I'll take the kids. They got water slides and all that kind of stuff. But like really, if you're coming to visit Costa Rica, you don't stay in a resort. You know, if you're going to go to Mexico, you stay in a resort. They got some absolutely beautiful resorts in Mexico, and they're actually probably more affordable than the ones here too. That's what I say. If you want to go to an all-inclusive resort, go somewhere else. Go to Punta Cana, whatever. But if you're coming to Costa Rica, you know, yeah, you immerse yourself in the culture a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like the my son is actually going to an all-inclusive in like February next year, my older son, and it's in Tulum. And I'm like, why'd you go there? He's like, because it was cheap and it looked good, right? It had good reviews. So I could see that for sure.
Well, I went to Cuba like four times because you could go there, stay in an all-inclusive resort with the whole family for like $4,000 or something like that. You know, so that's including the flight to go to Sunwing the whole week. All, you know, not that the food's great, but it's like $4,000 for a family of four to go for a whole week.
Yeah,
You
that's
know?
really affordable, and that's nice too. But Mike, you've also been like doing some interesting charting of stocks, and then you like obviously if anybody's watching the video, Mike's shirt is like Bitcoin shirt. He's got like a bowl hat, so like and he's got Bitcoin picture background there. So
Well, that's his
obviously,
real place, isn't it, Quentin?
yeah,
Is that
that's right.
your
My new
that's a
condo.
sweet pad.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, into like charting and, like obviously you've ended up into cryptocurrency. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about
That's a custom Bitcoin punching bag right here too, just in case you didn't see that.
that.
So you actually mentioned earlier, were there any other streams of income? Along the way, I also got into investing in stocks. Once I was into real estate, it's a natural extension to get into stock market investment. But that takes a while to wrap your head around it, right? And to become confident at it. So I became confident at the real estate pretty quickly, and I would have considered it a main business of mine from 2008 onwards. The stock business took some time, and there was a lot to learn. There was some mistakes to make, and I was always really good at probability statistics and charting in school. I was taking grade 13 math and grade 11 because I wanted to, and I'm not a gifted student or anything like that, but I was very good at that subject. And it applies directly to real estate and collectibles and stocks and all this stuff, right? My mind's already wired that way. And I started to read books and some of the common ones, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and all that good stuff, right? Wealthy Barber, all that stuff. Warren Buffett. But then I got into the technical analysis and the charting. And you watch your BNN Bloomberg and your CNBC, and they do some charting on there sometimes. And I started looking deeper at it. And it might sound kind of crazy, but I've taught myself to be able to analyze charts and use them for my investments at a pretty high level. Self-teaching and learning from other experts on YouTube and on the internet that I've followed for years, reading books, studying election cycles, all this stuff. And when 2020 came and when the recent election just came in 2024, I gave my followers a direct game plan on what to do, and it worked out. So that's, I've really, really shifted my focus to stocks, cryptos, and using chart analysis with it.
Okay. And so you got into like crypto. So what kind of like crypto is a big topic because there are there's Bitcoin, right? And then there are the other kind of I will call them like stable coins, like Ether, and I don't know if you would call that a stable coin or not, or Solana. And then there are like all the meme coins, and there are, real world assets and like AI coins and all this stuff. So what are investable, cryptocurrencies to you?
Luckily going into the cryptocurrency thing, I'd already gone through the stock market venture, right? How do you pick which stocks to buy, right? Do you buy just the blue chips? Do you buy just Canadian ones? Do you buy penny stocks? Like, what do you do? Do you chase the pot stocks in Canada in 2016 and 2017? There's all these things you can chase. And then there's your Royal Bank and your Microsoft and stuff like that, right? And with real estate, do you buy the prime location and pay more, or do you buy the little scattered locations and hope for the best, right? You can kind of apply that logic to all of these things. So I kind of luckily already had somewhat of a roadmap from real estate and from collectibles and from, investing in stocks. And I kind of applied that type of a logic over to cryptos. So if you're not familiar with cryptos, that might sound a little weird, but there's a crypto market, just like a stock market and a real estate market and a collectible market. And a lot of the skill sets I've built over the years are transferable to the next thing I do. And sometimes you need to adapt them a bit. But with cryptos, I was able to judge the ones that were more the blue chippers, the ones that were kind of middle of the road, and then the ones that were just completely speculative. And I was able to use my past methods of, analysis, engaging value and risk on cryptos as well.
Okay, so you're using what you've learned from from investing in real estate and stocks into cryptocurrency. That's really interesting. I think sometimes we forget how much the things that we've learned over the years helps us to get to where we are now, right? Are you able to derive income from that, or is it more like betting on appreciation, kind of like a little bit more speculative?
So it's both for me, which is wonderful. It's ideal to have both. You could be a realtor that's making money on commissions, and you could also own real estate and speculate, right? And so for me with the cryptos, what I've done is I've been through three crypto cycles. Okay, it's not my first time
Can you
around the block.
explain that? Because I don't know if anybody
Okay.
understands what that means.
So, there's an Olympics every 4 years, right? And you wait for the next Olympics, you wait for the next World Cup. Well, there's a World Cup of cryptos for Bitcoin. There's a cycle every 4 years that we wait for as crypto investors. And I didn't know that in 2017, but I did know that 4 years later, I studied. And in 2020 and 2021, I took big advantage knowing that there's a 4 year cycle, just like there's an election every 4 years.
Yeah,
And
so what happens in every 4 years?
so basically, Bitcoin is an asset that has a limited amount out there. So picture there were 21 million Michael Jordan rookie cards in the world, okay? And there's a certain amount that have been released, and there's a certain amount of those rookie cards that are still in unopened packs of cards out there that you can go find them, right? With cryptos, out of the 21 million, there's 19 million or so already out there, and they're still releasing some, right? Every 4 years, they give out half as many of the remaining Bitcoin. So, imagine you go to your store and they bring in 1,000 of the new PlayStation, and then when the next new PlayStation comes out, they bring in 500, right? Now you got to fight for 500 new PlayStations. That's kind of what they do with cryptos. They're giving out less and less of them per day, and that value changes every 4 years. It's called a halving cycle. You get half as many Bitcoin per day come to the market, brand new ones that you could actually go try to purchase, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, but that's specific to Bitcoin, right? That doesn't necessarily happen with other cryptocurrency, right? Like, so that's the Bitcoin cycle. Okay. And then how do you make money off of that cycle?
So through my charting and my pattern recognition and my probabilities and everything that I have spinning through my head when I'm looking at this stuff, I kind of just back test a lot, okay? And there's a book I read in 2006 that taught me about the presidential election cycle, which is every 4 years. And, stocks go up a heck of a lot after the US election. And there just seems to be this cycle that you can expect and count on. And with Bitcoin, I've learned the same thing. And most people don't zoom out on charts like I do and use them the way I do. But if I zoom out on that chart, you can see a clear, distinct peak in the Bitcoin price every 4 years. And sure enough, 4 years later, there's another peak in the Bitcoin price. And I couldn't deny the pattern that was in place and how it coincided with the Bitcoin halving event, which happens every 4 years. And that's the same year as the presidential election, which makes everything go up additionally. So you're getting a rarity factor, you're getting a rally post-election in pretty much all assets for the most part, and you're getting dollar devaluation and inflation. And if your dollars are less valuable, you got to pay more for a house, more for
But I
people.
think so. Let's just put it like this though. Like it, so you're believing in Bitcoin, right? It goes up and down, it goes through its cycles just like everything else. But throughout that time, you're just buying and buying, and when it comes to that halving moment, that's when it pays off. Is that what
That's
you're?
yeah, exactly. So after every
So it's
peak,
not really like you have to do anything extra or whatever, like as you're waiting for that. You more just have to believe in the product and do the investment.
like a pre-con condo, once it's completed, then the value's there, I guess. Is that what you're saying, Rob?
Well,
Like,
basically, I'm seeing opportunistic times where the price has come down a lot and people have lost faith in it. And they don't recognize what I'm telling you about the cycle.
right,
And there's
I see.
people either that don't recognize the cycle or they do and they've taken some
So
profits,
you've been
right?
very strategic about when you've purchased it based on the cycles and the prices and some of your ability to, I guess, forecast the market.
Yeah, I no one can time the market fully, but man, am I doing a good job on those metrics. And I was warning people when to get in through the 2020 onwards cycle. And I'm doing the same thing now with the 2024 onwards cycle. And I'm trying to teach people how it works because most people don't know. And I want them to hopefully make the choice to experience the rally that I think is still coming right
All
now.
right, all right. So we're gonna put this to the test. Today, Bitcoin is 104K US. At the end of January, Mike, what do you think Bitcoin is going to be?
Yeah, don't put me on the spot or
He
anything.
loves doing stuff like this.
That's like the worst question you can ask anyone. So it's very difficult for me to come up with an accurate number. Nobody can do that. Nobody.
Your gut
But
feel.
my gut feel is that we will be at least between 150 and 200,000 in January.
At the end of January, really?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. That's I appreciate you putting yourself out there and saying that, because that's the crystal balling is impossible, right? Nobody can crystal ball anything. But it, when you have that gut feel and you're telling people to buy something, you're invested yourself, right? You're putting your own money where your mouth is. And I think that's because a lot of people will sell real estate or sell, books or sell products, but they not necessarily invested in it themselves, right? And I think that's important to me with when you're talking about a particular, stock or product or whatever it is, right? You got to
Well,
be self-invested.
that's important. I have a question for you. Like alternatively, when the market is high, are you selling off and using that like as income through the year, or how are you making income through the year?
So, I ended up selling my Bitcoin when it was about 56,000 in 2022 very publicly. I have an online social media community with Invest Like Mike. If you go on Facebook, I have an Invest Like Mike group for free. And I posted there that I got out. And I basically was selling Canadian real estate, getting out of my Bitcoin. And I knew what, eight rate hikes was going to do to the economy. And I just waited for it to happen. And I bought everything back cheaper, essentially. So that's one way I benefited from it. But what I also did in 2020, we all went online with Zoom video all of a sudden, right? Nobody expected to work from home and be stuck at home. And I ended up having some friends of mine say, listen, there's people teaching through Zoom video. It sounds weird, but it's common now. And with what you know and with what you've been sharing in your social media groups, you should try to teach it to people one-on-one or as a class and do it through Zoom video. So in 2020, I started a whole new, couple of revenue streams of one-on-one coaching people in a class format. And I started a weekly training session where I summarize what's happened
For
every.
reading charts, right? Because I remember you were showing me how to read charts too, because that wasn't something that I knew a lot about, right?
I was basically teaching people all the different tools that I use basically for investing. So charting is part of it, but part of it is just teaching them what a darn market cycle is and how the US election works and showing them what happens after market crashes and what does it mean to have a bailout, money printing, lowering rates drastically, raising rates drastically. I've been teaching people about all this stuff in combination with the charts, in combination with the crypto cycles and everything else. And it's a heck of a mess to teach people. But usually if you understand a subject at a high enough level, you can try to use analogies and simplify it down into a palatable way that they'll understand. So I started doing that in 2020. And at this point now, I'm pretty darn good at explaining things to people, even if it's a complex subject. I've tried to figure out ways of explaining it.
So, are you saying that your main revenue source now or income source is teaching and coaching?
It's probably investing. I mean, it's hard to beat the
Investing.
investing returns, to be
Right,
honest.
right.
But that's my job at this point. I mean, that's probably a better way to describe it, right? Like,
So it's a your active income is from the coaching, and then your investments are in stocks, crypto, and like flipping. Do you still flip like merchandise and stuff like that?
not really. I have really good stuff that I'm packing away for a while and I'm
Oh,
gonna
you're
hold.
holding.
And I don't think there's any reason to get rid of my Beatles albums and my Guns N' Roses and all Mike Tyson and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's and do you still have those shorts, the Hulk Hogan
Oh
shorts? Is that one of
boy.
like the, do you have that in like a case or something? Like,
I've got them in a very protected place. I think there's only 19 of them in the world, so it's a pretty special piece. I paid like, I think I paid $1,725 US for those, and I know they're already worth 5 or 10 grand, and
wow.
I think they'll be worth 10 or 20 grand at some point.
Man, I never thought underpants would be worth that much.
Yeah, and they're not even clean. There's like blood or something on there.
Oh, too much information. Awesome. It's been great chatting with you.
Okay, so where would people learn more about that? Can you tell us the website again?
So, if you go check out investlikemike.com, it'll give you my bio and kind of what I'm doing. If you go to Facebook, type in Invest Like Mike, and you can join my group there, and you'll see everything I'm talking about. The main thing to mention to people is I have a crypto boot camp service where $150 a month, it's pretty cheap. And you get 1 hour of videos with me live every Sunday. I post the recording to a private group. You can watch it whenever you want after the fact. And I tell people what's going on in the crypto market, what I own, what I'm selling, what my strategies are. And I'm trying to take people that don't know that much about Bitcoin or people that do know a bunch about Bitcoin and try to accelerate their strategy towards it.
Okay,
Cool.
that sounds
Awesome.
good. We'll put all that info in the show notes so people can access that from there. And again, thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing all this. So this has been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me and not making fun of my Bitcoin shirt too much.
It was really interesting and a different conversation for us, that's for sure. And Rob, how do people get a hold of you and get in touch with you?
Well, you can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. That's my email address, and you can just ask me any questions you want there. Also, if you're going to be in the area, check out Manta Ray Lodge. We've got that going on now, and I mean it's actually booked up pretty good over the next couple of months. Like as soon as Christmas hits, we're pretty much fully booked. But worth checking out because every once in a while there's a few days in there. So, if you're interested or in the area, just check that out, mantarelodgecr.com. And Quinton, how can people get in touch with you?
They can go to quintondesouza.com and book a 15-minute call. Happy to chat with you about real estate or investing. And if you're interested in learning about real estate investing, I encourage you to join Durham REI at durhamrei.com and connect with me there. I do monthly live meetings that are streamed, and people from all over can watch. So it's always been good. I've been doing that since 2008, so it's been a long time.
Wealth of knowledge there. Go
Awesome.
do it. Go
Oh,
sign up. Go.
and one other
Yeah.
thing, if
What
you're
other
interested in the
thing?
sixplex, please connect with me, and I'd be happy to share you some details about the single family home to sixplex conversion. If you're interested in, perhaps doing that project yourself, reach out to me.
Amazing. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you next time. Have a great day. Thank you. I was
Yeah.
gonna say when right at the end, and I just had to hold my tongue. I just couldn't do it. I was gonna say, Quentin, maybe you should try to sell your underwear online.
Yeah, good luck. That's not gonna work. I might get negative money. People will start charging me. I'm
The
like, what
police
the
show up at
hell?
your house.
Yeah. I was gonna, maybe you, Rob, with your 85-pound or 95-pound dumbbells, maybe
No, you don't want them after that. That's
you can
for
sell them.
sure.
I love the fact that, they weren't really clean. That was the best mic I was like.
So I gotta tell you something. Hulk Hogan was on a podcast and he was telling a story, and they've asked The Rock and stuff this too, like, what's the most embarrassing thing that kind of happened, like, during a match? And there was one time that, like, Andre the Giant, like, was punching him or body slamming him so hard or something that he literally shit his pants. So I might have those.
Oh
I don't
man.
know.